Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now with today's topic, here is James White.
And good morning. Welcome to The Dividing Line, or whatever time it is where you are. Let's see, what time is it according to my body? It is 8 o'clock at night. Oh, goodness gracious. It's a long flight. You know, those flights aren't too bad. It's about the same time to Heathrow or to Milan or wherever you are over there. It's about 7.5-8 hours and a little bit more coming back. And they're not, you know, it's just not that bad, especially when they have The Incredibles playing, which I watched first thing out of Milan yesterday morning. We barely made it. Oh, goodness. Italian traffic. Wow. What an experience. But anyways, we're here. And we are happy indeed to be here. I should have reset my system when I got back, shouldn't I? We'll do it after the program's over. 877-753-3341. Had to look up and look for my little cheat thing up there, because it's been forever, quite some time since we did this. And I don't think we could have done it from Italy. Believe me, it was hard enough to find a phone line, let alone do the internet thing. But time will eventually make that work out. Yeah, thankfully, I think one of the fun things was I got to watch The Incredibles in English. I had already seen, what was that? An old, remember High Chaparral? That was one of my favorite Western movies, not movies, but a TV show when I was a kid. It was High Chaparral. It was shot down in Tucson. And I saw an Italian version of High Chaparral. That is wrong, okay? When Indians are speaking in Italian... It's just something completely no. Just that doesn't work. So I saw High Chaparral. What I saw some other great. Oh, the Munsters. The Munsters in Italian worked. That actually was okay. But High Chaparral in Italian does not work at all. So anyway, that's what made The Incredibles fun was that the lips and what came at the lips were actually in sync with one another. And the funny thing is, it seems, and listening to the interpretation, notice I said interpretation. I was corrected by my second interpreter in Italy. Interpretation is of the spoken word, translation is of the written word. Just go with it. You may not really see it. There's a whole lot of difference, but trust me, the interpreters do. Because I think the interpreters think they're considerably better than the translators. Because the translators don't have to do it on the fly. An interpreter has to do it on the fly, sometimes even, you know, simultaneously. And that does take, you know, a special skill. And so they want to have that skill recognized. And so, anyway, I was listening to the interpretation, actually trying to follow it. And eventually, especially when we were doing biblical teaching, which is what we try to do regularly, but in other words, when I was trying to explain, like I was speaking out of John 6. The subject matter that I was speaking on, the two conferences I spoke at, was the issue of election and evangelism. This was the first time, according to these folks, this is the first time, at least in memory, that there had been a discussion, an actual public presentation, a conference on this subject in Italy. By evangelicals. I mean, Rome has always done everything in its power to crush opposition in Italy as far as religious opposition. I mean, you know, like I mentioned on the blog, Italy is a secular society, very secular. You can see evidence of the church everywhere, the Roman Catholic Church everywhere. Everywhere you go, you look around, you see these churches, they're always at the highest point on the hills and all the rest of that stuff, but many of them are closed. I think I might have seen a dozen priests, grand total, in 2 weeks in Italy, and maybe a dozen nuns, and almost all of them were at the Vatican. You just don't see them. You just don't see them. The first thing I saw when I went to Rome was prostitutes. You look at the advertising, you look at the society. Italy is a secular society. Roman Catholicism has almost no influence upon the daily life of the vast majority of Italians. None at all. Zip, zero, nada. Okay? And but it's religious. It's when evangelicals, as late as, I think it was, telling me the 1870s, there were evangelicals who were imprisoned for studying the Bible in their homes, as late as the 1870s. And Rome has done everything it can to keep the Reformation out of Italy. There are numerous. I got to one of my hosts, a fellow by the name of Renato, who took me around in Rome, has done a tremendous amount of research on the documents of the Inquisition and Italian martyrs who died for their, and especially his area of expertise is Reformed martyrs, who. He pointed out Calvin's Geneva produced oodles of missionaries who went into Italy, and almost every single one of them died. In fact, he was giving a talk this past Sunday at a church that was founded by one of these Italian martyrs, and it was like their 200th anniversary or something like that, and he was giving the speech. And it's fascinating to me that Calvinists are said to destroy missions work and evangelism, and yet it was Calvin's Geneva that cranked out all these men, these young men, who went right into the lion's den, literally, into Rome and Italy as a whole, knowing that they were going to die for so doing. It wasn't Arminius that was creating those folks. It was Calvin's Geneva that was doing so. So anyway, this topic, extremely unusual. I was speaking for Passaggio, which is an Italian publishing organization that puts Reformed materials into people's hands, and they'll have stuff by D. Martin Lloyd Jones and John Piper and John MacArthur and Charles Haddon Spurgeon and all that kind of stuff, and they're publishing all this stuff. And the subject was the subject of election evangelism, and so I would be listening as people, as translations were being made of what I was saying, and it was fascinating. I was picking up a lot of the Italian, and sometimes the terminology that my interpreter would use was better than what I had chosen to use, and I actually liked it better and said, yeah, that's an excellent way of doing it. And how did I get onto the subject of interpretation anyways? I mean, I actually did a fairly decent job. I jumped on the four different topics there, but once I got back to the interpretation part, lost it. Anyway, the subject matter was election and evangelism. It was the first time this had been done in Italy, and it was an honor to do that. Met a lot of wonderful folks, and some who could, all sorts of different levels of ability in English. And my wife got to go with me for the first week, and we didn't get a lot of sightseeing in. We got 1.75 days, shall we say, of sightseeing, and those were dedicated the first day to Venice. And which is the world's largest outdoor mall. Everywhere you went in Venice, each building, the bottom floor is a shop. It's modern, glass. I have a picture of a whole display of Oakley's there in Florence. And everything you want to find, including those masks. Maybe Phoebe and Chanel would know about these masks for Carnival that have the feathers on them. There can't be that many people in the world that would want those masks as were available in Venice. Just not possible. Just absolutely incredible. So anyway, Everywhere you went, shops, shoes, purses, anything you'd want to look for, almost. That's all the main thoroughfares in Venice is. That's it. And even the people who work in those shops don't live in Venice because it's far too expensive to do so. Only really rich people live in the stories above that, in the two or three stories above that. And so it was. We did a lot of walking. I was exhausted by the time we got done walking through Venice. It was it was incredible. Not too many bookstores. No, I didn't see a whole lot of those. But so we saw Venice, and then we had one day in Rome. And interestingly enough, that has been what has resulted in a lot of conversation because. When I finally established, thanks to E. Nielsen and Channel, who directed me to a worldwide dial-up networking service that we signed me up for so I could get online, once I get online, I blogged a little bit about the trip to Rome. And we went to Vatican City, we visited St. Peter's, and then we went and visited the Colosseum. And I put up a couple pictures, I made some comments, and once again, it is amazing to me the kinds of responses made by allegedly well-read, intelligent Roman Catholic apologetics types to the things that I said. And there was, in fact, I invited this fellow, Xavier, on Planet Envoy. I gave the link on my blog last night once I saw this. And on the 21st of this month, he posted the following post. Said, "Good morning. Evidently, Dr. James White has been traveling in Italy recently. In addition to his many other honors, Dr. White has the distinction of being the first man in history to ever visit Italy and complain about the food." Yes, I must confess that I have a very narrow palate, shall we say, and I will likewise confess that I would prefer, in most situations, the Italian food at the Olive Garden to the Italian food in Italy. But that's just simply a matter of taste. Big deal, okay? You know, you live with it. By the way, it did work. The James Goes to Italy diet managed to knock 9 pounds off. That's probably just because you have the amount of calories you're taking in each day, and that's what's going to happen. And you know, walking around Venice for a number of hours doesn't hurt. But anyway, he continues on, of course, to say apparently there is not enough protein in the Italian diet to feed Dr. White's roid rages. Isn't that nice? Maybe before he's done writing travel literature, he can take some time to extol the virtues of Scottish cuisine. It tempts one to recall St. Jerome describing Pelagius as that big fat fellow bloated with Scots porridge. Well, isn't that nice? I get the feeling Xavier probably wouldn't say that to my face, but, you know, that's what these kinds are sort of like. Anyways, at any rate, it seems Dr. White felt him incumbent upon himself to take time out of his busy schedule to pay a visit to St. Peter's Basilica. He has written a charming travelogue describing the event, complete with photos. Actually, it was, I didn't have a lot of time. When you're on dial-up and you're paying for the dial-up, you can't, you know, just necessarily be as verbose as you wished, and also wasn't overly awake. And it was very brief. Just here's a couple of things that caught my attention, and so we continue on. Join Dr. White on this whimsical journey as he sallies forth into the belly of the beast, waxing philosophical as he ponders the basilica's place in ecclesiastical history and eschatological future, wandering among the dark and spooky tombs of the popes. Well, you know what? It was rather dark in a number of those areas in St. Peter's, and a place filled with tombs does remind one of a mausoleum. There was nothing warm about that place. There was nothing inviting about that place. It's made of marble and various precious metals. It's I will admit, when I look at something like St. Peter's, when When I visited the Papal Treasures exhibit in Denver in 1993, I had the same feeling. And that is, when I'm looking at tiaras and, you know, tiaras don't impress me. I'm sorry, tiaras don't impress me. Jewels do not impress me. The riches of Romanism do not impress me. And I can't see how anyone can be impressed by those things, to be honest with you. But, one of the reasons they don't impress me, and one of the reasons that in fact they revolt me, is because I do know the history, despite the fact that these folks want to, you know, get into the ad hominem stuff and talk about how ignorant I am. I don't see any phone lines ring because I invited them to call in. This is a wonderful opportunity. I'm jet lagged. I'm tired. I've only had a few hours of sleep. And if these folks are so brilliant, so right, this would be their chance. But, you know, it's amazing. People who are brave behind keyboards are generally cowards in person. And that's been my experience with these folks. You got to give me one thing. I'm the same in person as I am behind my keyboard. If I'll say it behind my keyboard, I'll say it to your face. I'll say it in a debate. You got to give me that. And for the vast majority of my opponents, they're not that way. All of a sudden, when you get into a debate, they're just so different. Don't have the courage of their convictions, evidently. But anyways, Mr. Xavier should know that when I look at St. Peter's, I know where St. Peter's came from. I know how it was financed. I know how that gold got up there on that wall. I look at these tombs of these popes and these huge statues, and they're sitting there, and they've got their crowns on, and their hands extended, and they're speaking so wisely from the throne. And I'm, it makes me sick. Selling God's grace in the form of indulgences makes me sick. If you know something about God's grace, you cannot help but be made sick by the prostitution of it. And it doesn't help at all to say, oh, well, you know, we fixed that. We don't sell them anymore. So what? You did. Peel all that gold off the wall and give it back to the people you stole it from. You know? So, yeah, I can't. It does impact me to think about where the funding came from to build this massive monument to the arrogance of man, to the arrogance of men who call themselves Christians. Yeah, that doesn't attract me at all in any way, shape. How can it? How can you separate that out? You know, I suppose some people can. They can just look back and, well, that's the way things were. Everybody was corrupt back then. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. That's not true. And the selling of indulgences to finance the building of a huge, massive monument to the egos of corrupt men, and they were corrupt. Come on, the history's there. Roman Catholic apologists even admit the history is there. In fact, they try to make it an argument for Rome. They say, well, if the church can survive the debauched popes of the pornocracy and Alexander and some of the other popes that were just, you know, so horrible and the poisonings and the intrigues and the centuries during which the cardinals vied with one another to buy the papacy, if it can survive all that, it must be divine. That's the argumentation you'll hear. But I'm sorry, standing outside the grandiose crypt of a dead guy who I don't consider to have been a Christian. I consider him to have been an antichrist because he sat in the place of Christ. He taught a false gospel. He enslaved people and their souls to a false gospel, to a false hope. Yeah, that impacts my looking at that and going, oh, that's a beautiful thing. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's just a big pile of rock that will stand as testimony in the end time to the utter corruption of the system that created it. That's what it is. And so you can draw all the pretty pictures you want on idolatry. It's still idolatry. You know, you look at the ancient temples that were built to false gods, and you go, wow. The depths to which man will go to use the greatest gifts God has given to him? Simply to cover over his own idolatry. Or to adorn his own idolatry. Not even cover it over, to adorn his own idolatry. You know, what can I say? Yeah, I look at it that way, and I point those things out. Do any of these responses, by the way, I'm reading what's linked on my blog. Do any of these responses deal with indulgences? Deal with the criticism of indulgences that we've made? Of course not. The vast majority of these folks never even read what we say. They never even read the books. They just quote each other. You know, one person says X, Y, or Z, produces some criticism, and then you just quote it 10 times until it becomes truth. And so, anyway, Xavier continues on. He quotes from my blog, "I could not help but smile as I scanned around the structure of the citation of all the key Petrian passages in gold around the top of the walls, passages such as Matthew 16, Luke 22, 32, etc., knowing how easily and forcefully the misuse of such passages can be refuted and has been refuted time and time again. I stood in the midst of the enemy camp and could not help but realize that everything I was seeing hangs in midair, all of its foundations have been washed away." And he says, "Not to be missed, read more." Well, how about responding to that? How about, why can't these folks talk about the pseudo-Isidorian decretals, the nation of Constantine? Why can all they do is refer back to something in the 1800s where some priest tried to rehabilitate the complete misinterpretation of Luke 22? Is that the best that they have? Is ad hominem mockery all that the great Roman system has? I wonder. And then he gives the link to the article. And he says, especially poignant is his deep reflection upon pausing in front of the tomb of Pope John Paul II for a photo op, reflecting upon how the great man will be remembered. And I had said, now, and here's a good example of why you should always, take the time to read the context that people offer. Because I actually had made a little bit more commentary than is now here quoted. Of course, quoting the whole thing would not have helped the case that was being made. But actually what I had written was, of course, one of the longest lines I stood in was the one visiting the underground crypt, specifically that of John Paul II. No one really cared much about the rest of them, and in 100 years, this one will not stop anyone for long either, period. That's where he stops the quote. What I went on to say was, but for now it remains a huge attraction. Give him credit, it's not overly ornate. And in comparison to the gaudy, self-aggrandizing ones in the main structure, it speaks far better than most. Now, if you're going to review what somebody said, don't you think maybe, possibly, you might want to include that? Xavier didn't. Xavier did read it, and Xavier left it off for a purpose, and it's a dishonest purpose, isn't it, Xavier? Yeah, we both know that. That's why the phone's not ringing. 877-753-3341. You can dial it quick. Yeah, you can. And he goes on to say, you know, we Catholics have been extremely unjust in accusing this man and his sycophants of anti-Catholic bigotry. Surely you can all see now that the Holy Spirit is upon this man, and it is out of profound love for us that he and his minions endeavor in the Lord's vineyard through our slings and arrows to bring us to the true gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. Bless you, Dr. White, for pulling the scales from our eyes, where we had been kept in blindness, held in slavery by the hellish counterfeit gospel system of works concocted by satanic Rome. Well, Xavier, like I said, I've invited you to call in. I would be happy. And then he says, P.S., can any of my fellow Catholics tell me again if they'll be supporting White in any of his future debates? I'm not sure what that means. I don't know what that means at all. Evidently, just simply quoting something, is he disputing that 100 years from now, John Paul II will not be nearly as popular as he is today? Is that what exactly is offensive about that? What exactly is untrue about that? How many, by raising your hand, how many in the listening audience, including Roman Catholics, know who the Pope was? Don't look, don't Google it. Know who the Pope was 100 years ago. Who was it? I was down there. Nobody was stopping at whoever's his tomb was. Nobody was looking at that. It was a factual observation. Why read anything into it? And why skip the part where I said, you know what? At least he, you know, it seems consistent with the man that he doesn't have one of those crypts upstairs with the big, you know, he could have ordered that. He could have ordered that. But he didn't. And I dared say something that, you know, I'll probably take heat for that, for having said, you know what? Give him credit. At least it fits what he said about himself. It fits the view he gave of himself. But no one will ever mention that, of course. No. We can't be fair. No. So, Xavier, give me a call, man. I'm wide open here. I'm not hiding behind my keyboard. Are you going to hide behind yours? We're going to do another program on Thursday. Got another one on Tuesday. Why don't you contact us, Xavier? Contact the ministry. We will meet your schedule. How's that? We'll meet your schedule. We'll set up to do a program, and you come on, and we'll discuss this together. How does that sound? Being open there? Sure. That sounds good. That sounds like a plan to me. Then a guy named Uncertain Drummer says, "Wow, I thought this was a joke that I went to the link. I am dumbfounded." We're not told why. What exactly did I say that's odd? I mean, my personal response to what I saw is based upon my theological beliefs that I derive from Scripture. How about dealing with that? How about interacting and not just throwing rocks? I mean, is it really a testimony that this is the true church and that you have the truth, that the only way you can respond to observations that someone makes about your religion is to throw rocks at them, to silence them? I mean, that is the history of Rome. There in Italy, it is. It's not engagement and demonstration of error. It is silence, imprison, kill, murder. That's Rome's history in Italy in dealing with theological opposition. They're just not in a position to do it at the moment. But that is their history. So we have a system here, and you would think, wouldn't you, that the best way to demonstrate that that's not an accurate picture of Rome is to do something other than that, but that's not what happens. I mean, Art Cipo then weighs in, and of course, Art Cipo can't write anything that isn't just filled with acid, and you can read what he says. He's, the man is beyond any type of rational dialogue or discussion. But I'll just read the one thing that he said here. Mr. White is an ignorant bigot who has no academic credentials. I guess Fuller Seminary doesn't exist, and I haven't been teaching for 10 years. But anyway, he was raised by bigots to be a bigot and would parade around a white sheet burning crosses on people's lawns if there was any money in it. There's Art Cipo. And I told you all that Art was the most immature man I've ever debated. He's probably the most arrogant and nasty man I've ever debated. And that's probably why the tapes, quote-unquote, tapes of the quote-unquote debate that we did in 1991 just sort of disappeared. But we've made available that which we have, and the rest you have to take either my word or Art Cipo's. And you know what? I will be more than glad to let you read the body of literature produced by Art Cipo and what I've produced. And we'll go from there. How's that? And I'd like to look at something that Uncertain Drummer said in the next part of that, and we also have a phone call, and we'll take your phone calls at 877-753-3341, but we're going to take our break and be right back.
Do your best and nothing less to be blessed. Try to save your soul from death. It's all works righteousness, you know. Can I manufacture grace for self-denial in some religious place? By weeping hard on your face or saying prayers to some dead saints, you know.
Not to preach a little... Christians around the globe are having the very foundation of their faith challenged at an unprecedented level from every imaginable source. Never before in history has the authority and inspiration of the Holy Scriptures been so viciously attacked by those outside the pale of orthodoxy and within the walls of traditional evangelicalism itself. Questions that plague the steadfast Christian from the onslaught of Bible skeptics, such as the Jesus Seminar, the Da Vinci Code, and wolves in sheep's clothing, leave many without needed answers. Is the Bible a product of man, not of God? Is it true that the New Testament is a false testimony? Is it true that the canon of Scripture was distorted by men with a political agenda? Is it true that Jesus' divinity was the result of a vote of bishops? Is the Bible true? Join us August 26th and 27th for the 2005 Alpha and Omega Ministries National Conference in Seattle, Washington, as we answer the tough questions and challenge the false presuppositions of the skeptics and deniers of the gospel of Jesus Christ, with the founder's president and director, Dr. Tom Askell, the director of Baptist Studies Center at Westminster Theological Seminary, Dr. James Renahan, Grammy Award-winning Reformed Christian musician, Steve Camp, and president and founder of Alpha and Omega Ministries, Dr. James White. And on Saturday, the 27th of August, don't miss the most important debate of 2005, Dr. James White versus Jesus Seminar Chairman and Bible Critic, Dr. John Dominic Crossland. Is the Orthodox Biblical account of Jesus of Nazareth authentic and historically accurate? Featuring 3 hours of debate and cross-examination. Join us and be a part of this historic event that will sharpen your apologetic and reassure your convictions in God's perfect and holy word. Seating is limited, so sign up today at aomin.org or call 877-753-3341.
Welcome back to the Dividing Line. You know, you should make sure that you are getting ready for the debate. Time is a-wasting, and if you haven't made your arrangements, you don't want to be left out. You don't want to look back and go, wow, you know, if I had just listened, if I had just done what I was supposed to do. Discounts are ending, the 31st of this month? That's a week from today. So after this, you know, I get so many people come up to me. Oh, you know, hey, can you still get me a good deal? It's like, where have you been for the past few months? Sorry, procrastinators are going to have a problem. There is just simply no other way about it than that. So you need to get taken care of. I was actually taking the train, the Eurostar, from Rome to Modena in Italy, and I was listening to my MP3 player, and I stumbled across the Cross and Craig debate, and I was rather fascinated by the fact that listening once again to this information, I really am not sure exactly how this program is, this debate is going to go, what direction it's going to go. But I certainly know that it is going to be foundational. It is going to be important. You're going to want to be there. You're going to want to be able to say that you got to see it live. Because you know what? DVDs are great. They really are. And MP3s are great. And I'm glad that what we do in this debate is not going to be limited simply to the people who managed to be there. But anyone can tell you that a DVD, despite the how well we make them or how many cameras we've got or how good the color is, whatever, A DVD cannot communicate to you those little things that only the live debate communicate. The expectation in the air, the little mutterings that come from the audience every once in a while, the glance that you catch from me or from my opponent or the moderator, that the camera doesn't. All that stuff is important. And so the conference is going to be important. We're going to be working hard to present to you important information, and we've got excellent people speaking, and you're going to want to be there for that. And so I would very much encourage you, get off your seat. If you've been going, man, I really want to do that, now's time to do it. Don't put it off. Take care of the issue now, so that you can get the best arrangements, and do not put it off any longer. Take my advice. So please do that. I'm also, by the way, very excited about next week's debate. Well, not, is it next week? No, the week after. The week after's debate on Long Island, it's the 9th of June, against Bill Rutland on the subject of, can a non-Christian enter into heaven? I really believe that this is going to be an excellent opportunity to contrast the views of modern Roman Catholicism and, honestly, sadly, in the same way, modern evangelicalism, post-evangelicalism, pseudo-evangelicalism, however you want to put it, with the biblical gospel. It's going to be an excellent contrast, and I will just be very upfront in saying I realize that I am going to be approaching this particular debate in such a way that, once again, I am going to be putting myself in the position of defending the minority, and that's fine. I like being in that position. That's okay. But I did get to spend some time, some downtime in Italy, writing, yes, with a pen. What a concept that was. On paper, even, in written form. I was not using a keyboard. Writing out various thoughts concerning the debate, challenges, directions I'm going to be going. So I've certainly been starting that process as to how I'm going to present it. And that is Thursday night, June 9th, Huntington Townhouse. The information's on the website. I need to update the calendar page, because it should still probably have the Italy stuff on it. But it's there on the calendar page. Take a look at that. And if you are in the area, you are certainly invited to participate in that. Once again, they are well attended, and I think you would find them to be very, very useful as well. So make sure that's coming. And then before that, I should mention this, since we're getting all this, before we take our phone calls, since we're getting all this out of the way, I should likewise mention the fact that the weekend before that, I'll be at Bethlehem Bible Church up in West Boylston, Massachusetts. The information's also on the webpage. Doing a number of presentations there. So if you're in the Massachusetts area, or, you know, New England's not huge. So if you're in that particular area and you've wanted to get together with me and say hello or something like that, that would be the time to do so. The information is there. And then I'll be down at Trinity Fellowship Church in New Jersey, Toms River, New Jersey, Saturday and Sunday after the debate. So I'll be leaving from New York, driving down to New Jersey, if the Garden State Parkway doesn't turn into a parkway. That is a place where you park. take, you know, 4 hours to get there, something like that. But we will be down there on Saturday and Sunday. And so we invite you to be there. Let's go ahead and take our caller here and talk with Eddie. Hi, Eddie. How you doing?
Hey.
Hey, man.
Bonjour, Monsieur White.
Please don't even...
Comment ça va?
What are you trying to do? That's not Italian.
Buongiorno. Ciao. Here in the bayou.
Yes, I was going to kick anybody off, anybody out of channel who started going, ciao.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just wanted to share an observation in relation to the posting that you're speaking about with Xavier and the... in that Catholic chat board.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, I was Roman Catholic for almost 20 years and served as an altar boy, and I can remember back in those days distinctly. I remember there was a certain awe and holiness that came with all the candles and the gold and the statues and, you know, the whole grandeur of all that's the Roman system. And it was amazing that after my wife and I were converted, when we were born again, we went right back to the Catholic Church because we were converted through a ministry of a word faith evangelistic effort, and we didn't know any better. No one discipled us. No one took us in. So we just went back to church.
Right.
So, and I can remember we sat in that mass, and about maybe 15, 20 minutes into it, we became completely convinced that something just wasn't right. And it seemed as though this awe and grandeur and the things that we thought were holy and divine became just false, mystic, empty, eerie, spooky. And so I can relate to both sides of these comments because, like Xavier and these other folks, I remember when that was almost God himself to me.
Yes.
You know? And to see those statues was like I wanted to just touch it and feel it and say, wow, you know, this was actually like the Pope's pen. It was his shoe. It was because we were taught so much so that this was the vicar. This was the representation on earth. And, I mean, I remember seeing my mother and other friends and people weeping that this was the closest to God we were ever going to get in this life. And then when my heart was changed, it changed everything. And we got up and left right in the middle of the mass. I grabbed my wife's hand and I said, let's get out of here. We went in the parking lot. She says, that was weird. And we both were like, and understand, we had no discipleship. We had no training in theology yet.
Right, right.
It's just our spirit. And that goes to answer the question when people say, how long can a born-again individual stay within the Roman system? I don't have an answer, but I can only speak about my life.
Right.
And it's difficult for me to see how that could happen.
Right.
Because where God is and where the false gods are, there's a stark difference, even when you don't have the theological training.
Right, right.
You know? And so when I read your blog on that, it just hit me. I said, you know, praise be to God, because I remember the day when I would have really, really loved to have gone on that trip. You know? And it wouldn't have been just some dead, cold marble. It would have been much more and alive and vibrant.
Oh, yeah. I should say we've gotten a number of positive responses. A number of people have commented, yeah, Blatt, what you said really blessed me, and it really, you know, I understand what you're saying. So I don't want to just focus on the negative. It's just, and I fully do understand why people who think that Rome is what Rome claims to be would just look at what I'm saying going, man, what a clueless person. But these are supposed to be people who actually engage in apologetics. They're supposed to be people who have some kind of knowledge that they can see these things. And they show no evidence of actually recognizing their own traditions, their own starting points, nothing like that in any way, shape, or form. And so that was part of it. And, of course, then they have to throw in the ad hominems along with it, just simply
right.
To throw it in. But it's true. I looked around that place, and it was interesting. Okay, someone could say maybe everybody in there weren't Roman Catholics. There was no sense of worship or reverence or there was just nothing. It was cold. It was dead.
Right.
You know, you're looking at these people, and they were. What I saw was an attempt upon the part of people who held a position that is just simply truly blasphemous in God's sight. The idea of letting people call you the vicar of Christ and kissing your ring and bowing down in front of you and calling you Holy Father and all the rest of stuff. And this is their one last attempt to maintain that even after death.
Right.
And it didn't work.
It's amazing. I had a friend of mine tell me one day, he says, you know that couple that lives down the way, and it's this couple, and they have a Lexus and a nice house, and he says, they claim to be Christians and have this big church. Now, this guy's a Roman Catholic. He says, they claim to be Christians, and he says, they're just milking, you're going to love this, they're just milking off the backs of the people in that church. He drives a Lexus, he's got this house. And I giggled, and I just looked at him, and I said, well, don't you think that sort of pales in comparison to the palace the Pope lives in? And he looks at me like, oh, it never even entered his mind.
No, uh-uh.
And the conversation ceased. And then not a week later, I'm speaking with another lady about church matters at our church, dealing with some legal property issues.
Uh-huh.
And she sees all the name changes with the corporations through different pastorates and things. And she says, boy, I'm glad I'm in the Roman Catholic Church. She says, no offense, but, you know, we just got one name, one church. I looked at her and I said, do you really want to compare the corruptedness of your documents and properties to mine?
Well, yeah, I mean, at least your documents are real. You didn't have to make them up.
Exactly. And she looked at me and she says, you didn't just say that, did you?
And she didn't know you very well, did she?
No, exactly. Of course, you know, she quickly went on with the business at hand.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But, you know, and those are the ways that I try to just, you know, and yet you got to be graceful about it.
Sure.
But the massive amount of ignorance, you know, it's one thing to argue with people. And I know you know this, but it's one thing to argue with folks when they actually have the facts right. That's a true discussion.
Right.
But when they come up with the silliness of, oh, this Baptist guy's got a lot of money, and they're Catholic, and they're complaining about the richness of the church and the people in it. It's like, can we back up a few pages?
Well, and you know, it's almost like, okay, but that money and that corruption was centuries ago, and so it doesn't matter anymore. It's okay now.
Right.
That almost seems to be the idea that, hey, as long as the current guys who are living in there aren't still selling indulgences to continue building this place, then we don't have to worry about how this place was built in the first place or what it represents, or we don't have to examine the attitudes that are represented within this mausoleum and these statues and all the rest of it. We don't have to examine the attitude this represents on a biblical basis. Once it's there, it's there. We're the church. Deal with it is in essence what many people seem to think. So
absolutely.
Anyway. All right,
you know, when you look at those postings, just on an ending note, those folks, you're right. Their arguments are tantamount to I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's like okay. It's like okay. Well, throw sand at my sandbox. You know?
Exactly. That seems to be the level of it.
All right.
Okay, man. Thanks a lot.
Glad to have you back.
That's good to be back.
Bye.
God bless. Bye bye. That fellow would have handled the. Sorry about that. That fellow would have handled the. The food in Italy a lot better than I did. palate is a bit wider than mine. I wanted to get to this Uncertain Drummer post, but I want to read another one. There was a fellow, well, a single person, one post. So maybe this fellow saw, let's see, what's it? Yeah, look at this. This is interesting. This post went up this morning at 10:26 a.m., and so I think this was the result of someone seeing this on my blog, possibly. But it says, this forum is read by a lot of people, even though I agree with your assessment of JW. Thank you very much. I think we need to speak the truth charitably. Well, the problem is, since this assessment is in regards to possibly what Art Sipo said, where's the truth in nothing but acid-filled ad hominem? Where's the truth there? Firmly and tirelessly pointing out his faulty logic, lack of scriptural understanding, and lack of knowledge of church history. Okay, who's doing that? Who's doing that? That's what I'd like to know. We have a great opportunity to witness to those who read this. We are followers of Jesus Christ, need to share with the world the gospel as presented by the church, whose history goes all the way back to Jesus and not to a mere man as his does. We need to pray for him since he is in the dark and doing damage to Jesus. God has given us a huge task in helping to bring about his kingdom, and that's exciting. Well, that's nice, Tori. I appreciate the fact that Tori at least tried to tell people like Art Sipo, you know, your language, you know, when you say that someone is he was raised by bigots to be a bigot, you know, talk about utter ignorance. The bigot is Art Sipo. I mean, just look at his stuff, and a person who's a bigot is a person who makes comments based on who someone is. And to call my parents bigots and to start doing stuff like that, I mean, you know, what that man has written in comparison to what we've done, there's not even a comparison. The attitude, the perspective, the approach, everything is so different that it's not even, but he doesn't see that. This man is cultic in his blindness. He truly is. And that results in the kind of behavior you have here. But Uncertain Drummer, I love this kind of thing. In fact, if I can pull it up in Eudora, there's also another example of this. Did I put that down in the Roman Catholic area, or where did I put that one? You know, you get home and there's all this stuff waiting for you in your and it's. Let me see here. It was forwarded to me by. There it is. Okay, someone sent a email to us, and it says this, very, very brief, and unfortunately no way, as far as I can tell, to get back to this particular individual. It was just a comment that was left. If your seriously flawed understanding of indulgences disenables your enjoyment of visiting St. Peter's, is disenables a word? Then do us all a favor and don't go back. Okay, what is my seriously flawed understanding of indulgences? I have debated purgatory. I have debated indulgences against Roman Catholic apologists with PhDs. Why didn't they say in the debate that I don't understand what I'm saying? Why do they say I do understand it, and then these people that, as far as I can tell, are amateurs with no teaching experience, no publishing experience, anything like that, say, you don't know what you're talking about. Who's right? Who do I believe? Do I believe the opponents that I engage in debate who teach at Catholic seminaries and higher institutions of higher learning, or anonymous people on a website? It's hard to say. If you're going to say I have a seriously flawed understanding of indulgences, tell me. And you know what happens 99% of the time when someone does this? And you actually are in position to challenge them? What they mean is, you don't believe in indulgences, so you're wrong. Not that I don't understand them, but I disagree with them. Well, that becomes misunderstanding, because if you really understood it, then you'd believe in them. No, that's not the case. Okay, so dictionary.com, disenable, to make unable or incapable, prevent. Oh, there it is. So, anyway, what's wrong with my understanding of indulgences? Show me where I'm wrong in how I've represented the doctrine of indulgences and the role they had historically in the building of St. Peter's. Was not a tremendous amount of the money derived from the sale of indulgences funneled into the building of St. Peter's Basilica? Yes or no, historically? It's a fact, isn't it? So, deal with the fact, folks. Put your emotions in neutral and deal with the facts. Continues, by the way, why can't you support your claims by using evidence, perhaps, that the Catholic Church or Pope John Paul II teaches that Mary is the co-redemptrix? Apologist for the sophist, deceiver of the uneducated. I wish this person had given a way of contacting them, because I would have been very happy to have sent the electronic text of the chapter from Mary, Another Redeemer, that specifically, carefully, and accurately documents utilization of the phrase of the Fifth Marian Dogma, not as a dogma, but as a doctrine, specifically regarding to the subject of Mary as co-redemptrix, co-mediatrix, and advocate for the people of God in the teachings of John Paul II and in the Vatican II. And I would have sent the documentation that demonstrates in my own published writings the fact that I recognize the difference between a doctrine and a dogma. Did this person even read the book? Evidently not. And yet they can say, why can't you support your claims by using evidence, perhaps? I wrote a book on the subject. That's what amazes me about these people. When I talk about Carl Keating, I read Carl Keating's books. When I talk about Scott Hahn, I read Scott Hahn's books. Why can't these folks do the same thing? Why can't these folks do the same thing? I don't understand that. If you love the truth, why... Okay, Uncertain Drummer. Actually, Patrick, and Patrick's a Christian guy who takes lots of hits here. Actually, Patrick, White's absurd arguments are incredibly easy to dismantle. Well, Uncertain Drummer, the number, Thursday now, is 877-753-3341. Why don't you people call in and demonstrate this? They are incredibly easy to dismantle. For instance, For instance, he says, 2 Timothy 3, 16-17 proves sol scriptura, even though the same wording is used in James 1, 4 to say perseverance will make one perfect. Really? Wow, I've done all these debates. Jerry Matatix, Patrick Madrid, Mitchell Pacwa, on the subject of sola scriptura, and no one ever brought that up. Well, actually, yes, they did. And if Uncertain Drummer would read the Roman Catholic controversy, or read Scripture alone, or read Holy Scripture,
by Webster and King. Maybe, possibly, he might know that we are well aware of James 1:4 and have addressed not only the differences, uncertain drummer, in language, but of course the most important thing, and that is an exegesis, context is king. And context, the context of the two passages, is completely different. One is talking about the ministry of the man of God in the church for teaching of doctrine. The other is not. And so to even begin to parallel the two shows an abysmal ignorance of the basics of exegesis. That is not how one would engage in seriously studying the Word of God. He says, he alleges that since the Greek verb in Timothy is different than the one used in James, the meaning must be different. Well, it is. The verb used in James is a stronger verb, meaning to make perfect, to be completely sufficient, while the verb in Timothy is not. But the contexts are completely different. And so the meaning of a verb, when it is in reference to Timothy functioning as the man of God, being able to teach and reprove and rebuke and exhort, over against the experience of the Christian in going through sufferings and trials so as to be made complete spiritually as a believer, as a Christian, is they're completely different contexts. How can uncertain drummer not see this? But notice, while he has just demonstrated that he is the one who doesn't do exegesis, what does he then say? This is just a sample, misspelled, of childish arguments. Another thing, his bike shop analogy. He says that since he can get everything he needs at a bike shop, it is sufficient for his bike riding needs. He never explains how a bike shop is sufficient for your needs if you don't know how to ride a bike. Totally, completely, 1,000% irrelevant. The point of the bike shop illustration was what source do you go to meet a certain need? The need parallel between the bike shop and the truth of Sola Scriptura is to find God's inspired revelation so as to function as the man of God in the church. You're already the man of God. You already know how to ride a bike. The point is functioning in that way. It's God that makes you the man of God. It's God that gives you the gifts to be the man of God in the church of God. Where do you go to be able to reprove, rebuke, exhort in righteousness? Paul says that which is theanoustos. You don't have to go to multiple places. I pointed that out in the debate with Patrick Madrid. And I bet you dollars to donuts that Uncertain Drummer has never listened to that debate. He's going on second-hand information. And that's what I find these folks doing. They seemingly are satisfied simply to quote each other. As long as a Catholic said it, it must be true. An amazing thing to observe. It truly is. And it just simply goes to prove once again, where's the honor for truth here? Where's the beef, as they said? Well, wow, that music says it's time to go. We will be back. And so Uncertain Drummer, Xavier, the person who wrote to us and called me apologist of the sophist, deceiver of the uneducated, we will be back Thursday night, 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. The number is 877-753-3341. Guys, we'll be looking forward to hearing from you. See you then. God bless.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's AOMIN.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracts. Join us again this Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. for The Dividing Line.